This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Good evening and welcome to World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. And a huge, huge welcome to our Sydney listeners joining us tonight on Sydney Star Observer Digital Radio as a part of Mardi Gras 2014. Tonight, it's the boys' night. You've got Dean, Damien and myself, Matt, taking you around the world where we are stopping off in Zimbabwe. For over 25 years, Zimbabwe has been under the rule of President Robert Mugabe, a man that has called gay people worse than pigs and dogs. With very oppressive laws against the LGBT community, why is Zimbabwe not receiving the kind of attention that Russia is experiencing for their anti-gay laws? How does the LGBT community get by and, in fact, even stage a pride festival and a drag queen beauty pageant, all while dodging the police under Mugabe's control? It's the power of one. What will happen to Zimbabwe when President Robert Mugabe dies? Tonight, to understand gay life in Zimbabwe, we'll be speaking with Sarah, a Zimbabwe-born national, now living here in Melbourne.
This is David Wadali from the Umuntu Foundation, Malawi, Southern Africa. On the World Wide Wave, on Joy 94.9.
It's a World Wide Wave, taking you around the globe one country at a time. And we've had a message come in already.
We have indeed. You got that pronunciation wrong. Are there any African presenters? Are you all white from Dispossessed?
We are tonight, but we'll try to get our tongues around these very complex... Actually, the songs tonight, they've all got really big names.
I would also like to point out that not all Africans are not white. So potentially, you know, there are white Africans as well. Just want to put it out there.
Well, that's true. In fact, we'll be speaking to one of them tonight on the show.
We will indeed.
And a shout out as well. While we've been on air, we've had a new follower on our Facebook page. Josh, welcome. Thanks for listening. Now, we are tonight in Zimbabwe and time to kick off with some Zimbabwe Fast Facts. Now, gee, after the intro, it's pretty clear that male same-sex sexual activity is illegal under Zimbabwe's law. It dates back to those pesky colonial laws where pretty much sodomy ruled the way. It relates to common law. The law says it's unlawful and intentional sexual relations per annum between two human males.
Gets even better. You're not allowed to hold hands, let alone kiss and do all the other fun stuff.
It's quite limiting. They also have censorship, so it is against the law to import, print, publish, distribute, or keep for sale any publication which is undesirable. And undesirable means it's indecent or obscene or offensive or harmful to public morals or is likely to be contrary to public health.
Well, it has to be said that these laws do come from that shining paragon of virtue, Mr. Robert Mugabe. So, yeah, let's not sort of cry into our pillows over what he thinks of us.
And he is the one who, I guess, sets the tone for what is indecent or obscene because the laws don't actually define it. Living conditions. So homosexuality is highly taboo. It's a very, very socially conservative country. And although we'll learn that there's a lot of warmth in Zimbabwean society, but perhaps the politics takes over in terms of how gay people are treated.
What's interesting as well is that in some of the Shona tribes, one of the traditional groups, there's a belief that a man having sex with another man, particularly a younger one, can bring good fortune to the senior partner.
And actually, we find that with a lot of native countries that same-sex relations were accepted. They were quite a part of culture. And it's only when the colonial laws, the Victorian era laws came in, primarily from England, that things changed. In Harare and also Bulawayo, the two major towns in Zimbabwe, there are actually some underground gay clubs. or clubs that are accepting of gay people, I should say. So there is some gay life hidden away there in Zimbabwe.
Stashed away at the margins.
I think that's actually quite a plus, because all the countries that we visit, most of them are struggling in one sense or another with the advancement of the LGBT rights. But despite all the challenges ahead, there's always some sort of community and some sort of life.
And one of those other challenges is HIV and AIDS, which has plagued Zimbabwe. It is one of the highest rates, HIV infection rates, in the world. And in 2008, the Zimbabwe government spent $7.3 million, which was donated by the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria, but the representatives from that organisation weren't able to track down how that money was spent.
And even better, the government has declined to indicate how it was spent and has failed to honour requests to return the money. One of the issues with Zimbabwe is that many people cannot afford antiretroviral drugs, and there's only a few lobby groups with an active AIDS treatment plan. So, yeah, it's a tough country.
We're going to explore all these more with our guest tonight. Our guest is Sarah. Sarah was born in Zimbabwe and now lives here in Melbourne, and has been still maintains contact with many friends back in her home country, and she is going to bring us some wonderful insights into the country, some of the positives that won't be overshadowed by the negatives.
This is Audrey Gochran, the director of Amnesty International's Africa program on the World Wide Web.
And speaking of Africa, tonight we are in Zimbabwe. We spoke earlier in the week with Sarah. Now, Sarah is a native of Zimbabwe, Zimbabwean born, now living here in Melbourne. And we started by asking Sarah what life was like growing up in Zimbabwe.
It was one of the most incredible places, and I really think if I ever had children of my own, I'd want to bring them up in Africa, and especially Zimbabwe, because the people from both sides, whether you're black or white or mixed race, there is a beautiful camaraderie and a lovely kind of balance between them. I grew up, the schools that I went to were very mixed. It didn't matter. We didn't have the same racist issues that South Africa had when I grew up. So I had black friends, I had white friends, I had black boyfriends, white boyfriends. It didn't really matter.
Was race mentioned in media, in things like that, or was it just not an issue?
Not really. I grew up not seeing colour at all, and I only really noticed the race issue of Zimbabwe when Mugabe started saying that the white person was wrong and we'd stolen all the land and we were the enemy. Then I really felt like people started looking at me funny and different, because I liked a lot of black musicians, black Zimbabwean musicians. So I'd go to gigs where there were about maybe 10 white Zimbabweans and the rest would be local black Zimbabweans. And I remember once, after Mugabe had done a particularly rousing speech about we're going to give the land back to the black Zimbabweans, that I felt for the first time like a foreigner in my own land. That I was at this venue and I felt awkward, like I shouldn't be there. And like there was definitely an animosity towards me, which I hadn't felt before.
So people behaved differently
to you? A little bit, yeah.
How did that come through?
It was just, Zimbabweans are incredibly friendly, warm, smiling people. We chat to everyone. It doesn't matter, as I said, what your colour is. And I felt there was definitely just a little bit of a cold shoulder, a little bit of turn away. It was very subtle, but I definitely felt it, that there was a difference.
Did any of your friends, were they apologetic? Did they sort of, we don't agree with Mugabe?
Most of my friends are very anti-Mugabe. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is the problem, though. He was this incredible leader. He came in 1980, and we were all hopeful about it. He was going to be the guy who changed Zimbabwe, who put it on the map. And for the first sort of 15, 16 years that he was in charge, he did that. We were the breadbasket of Africa. We were the place that you wanted to be if you lived in Africa. And then suddenly he starts saying that the white person is wrong, because he felt like his grip on power, he was losing it. So when he'd done his electoral speech, he said, I will take back the land that the colonialists took from the black Zimbabwean people. So when he started going on about that, it was like his last ditch attempt to hold on to power. So there was a difference in camp, because the way that he did it was so wrong. I completely agree with the idea of it. What he should have done is gone on to the farms, given the white farmers compensation for their land, because they're third or fourth generation Zimbabweans. They didn't take the land. It was passed down to them and their families. And they should have been kept on as managers to to manage the farm and train the people who are coming in and taking over the farms as to how to run them.
Because there was a void which has, you know, impacted the economy, and therefore
nothing grows in Zimbabwe anymore. And the problem was that Mugabe didn't give the land to war veterans who fought in the war. He gave it majority-wise to his homies, to his friends, of just like, oh, you're a mate of mine, have a farm. If I got given a farm, I wouldn't know what to do with it. You know, so there's these people who've got these dairy farms and these cotton farms, and they're fallow because no one knows how to run them. And they've kicked off, they raped and pillaged and murdered a lot of the workers as well, the black Zimbabwean workers. So this is the problem. It wasn't just something that faced the white Zimbabweans. They were told they had 24 hours to get off their land. So Mozambique, Botswana and Zambia have cleaned up on this because they've got all these incredibly skilled farmers who are looking for asylum. So they just went, come on over to us, no problem. But the problem was that on a lot of the big farms in Zimbabwe, the farmers and the farm workers have a very good relationship. And often on the land, there were schools built. And so the farmers' children were looked after. They were educated. They lived on the land as well. So it was everything. It was their whole livelihood. So when the farms got taken over, the war vets who came in, as I said, like a lot of the farm workers' lodgings and everything were burnt to the ground. The farm workers' wives were raped. They've now got nowhere to live. There's nowhere for the kids to be educated. So it's messed up the whole country.
So if the country's so messed up, the last election, Mugabe was again. Now, whether there's lots of rumours and reports of corruption, but the last election, he was swept to power, overwhelming majority. Why do people still like him if there are these problems?
They don't like him. This is the thing. Mugabe has control of the media in the whole of Zimbabwe. There is no freedom of speech. Homosexuality is illegal there. You can't be gay. So he's got this amazing power hold on everything. He controls the military, he controls the police, and he makes sure that they're well paid and well fed so that they're happy, so that they enforce what he wants. Whereas there are people, Zimbabwean people in the rural areas, who are starving. What Mugabe does is that about a month before elections, he goes down there like the big saving hero, gives them a whole lot of food and promises a load more if they vote for him. So the rural area people are going, okay, this is the only way that we're going to get food. Let's vote for Mugabe. Everyone else who stood with Morgan Tsvangirai, who's the opposition leader, often gets beaten, oppressed, chucked in jail. Their lives are incredibly difficult if they're openly supportive of Morgan Tsvangirai. Mm. So in general, like even in the city centres, everything is very hush-hush. You don't mention your political affirmations, but it's just a well-known thing that most people don't support Mugabe. My ex's father died when he was 14. He keeps voting in the Zimbabwe elections. They're faking so much. It's just ridiculous. I helped with the opposition camp during the election
two elections ago. Yep.
And I think it was the UN invented this bright pink ink that you put on your finger and dip it into an ink pad to prove that you voted. It comes off in 5 minutes with bleach. So people are just re-voting. The whole thing is a sham.
Morgan Tsvangirai said that the election, not the one just passed, the previous one, there was a power-sharing deal done. There was lots of international involvement to make that happen. And there seemed to be a period of stability there. Did it happen? From an outsider's view, that was the impression.
We were incredibly disappointed by Morgan Tsvangirai because he came in, I guess, like you would look at Martin Luther King, that he was, rah, 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 we can do this, stand up for yourself, be strong and fight. So the previously oppressed black Zimbabwean people who were terrified of Mugabe and didn't want to speak up against him suddenly went, okay, we've got a figure that we can identify with, let's stand up. So they went to rallies. They were beaten. They were thrown in jail. They had a terrible, terrible time. And Morgan Tsvangirai kept saying, just a little bit longer, just a little bit longer. If you just support, we can make this happen. Then a little bit before the elections, Morgan Tsvangirai was in a car accident, which very dodgy circumstances. It was a lorry driver who'd only just started working for the company that day. The guy who was supposed to be driving the car was sick, all of this nonsense. His wife died in that car accident. It was blatantly just bullying him and going, okay, just watch yourself. And I think it broke his spirit a little bit. So instead of sticking to his guns and saying, no, I don't want a power-sharing deal, which he should have done, he agreed to share because I think he was terrified of the repercussions.
Boa noite. This is David from Brazil, listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
And that was the voice of Sarah, a Zimbabwean-born Australian. Interesting times. Interesting to hear actually both sides of the story. We hear a lot about Mugabe, but Morgan Tsvangirai, who was slated as, I guess, the saviour of Zimbabwe to turn it around from the grasp of Mugabe, and he's fallen out of favour.
Well, it's pretty hard to be saintly for that long. The first time I remember seeing him on television a few years ago, his face was had been like beaten in and was, you know, twice its normal size. So it's, it's just one of those situations where there are no perfect answers. It certainly throws our politics into perspective, though.
It was actually March last year, Tsvangirai came out and publicly, it was in the height of some election things, he came out and said that, or he basically turned on the LGBT community. He was quoted in the Herald on March 7 saying, "In the draft constitution, we said marriage is between a man and a woman. Those who want to marry another of the same sex, then they have a problem. Why do you want to sleep with another man?"
Could this be another example of a leader or an opposition leader or a well-known politician saying one thing to one audience and saying one to a domestic audience? So to an international audience with the BBC, in October 2011, he said gay rights were a human right that conservative Zimbabweans should respect. And presumably that's been thrown out the window when he's talking to a domestic audience of conservative Christians in his home country.
Whichever way, it's not helping the local LGBT community, is it?
No, not at all.
And if you have on the one hand the person that who he is opposing who's saying that gay people are worse than cats and dogs, trouble indeed. Now, we have got SMSs going off galore tonight. First one, we've got a message in from Bag Boy. Thanks, Bag Boy. "I love World Wide Wave and Zimbabwe means so much to me. You guys raise the bar every week and I love it. Thanks for the message." And one from Doug. "Hi, Matt and the team. Fascinating to hear the views of Zimbabwe." That's from Doug, who is involved with Kaleidoscope Australia, a human rights foundation, listening in here in on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. And a big hello to our Sydney listeners listening this week and, for the next 6 weeks. On Star Observer Digital, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse digital radio station in Sydney.
So we're hoping for twice as many SMSs.
"This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
You're on World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight we're talking about Zimbabwe.
We spoke with Sarah earlier on and wanted to speak to her some more about what part gender plays in Zimbabwe society. Tell us about being a woman in Zimbabwe. How do you fit within the culture? Are you seen as an equal?
I've never even thought about it. So I guess I must be. I've never felt oppressed for being a girl at all. But I grew up in a city. So I guess it's different. If I was a black rural Zimbabwean woman, then yes, it would be different because I'd be in the village looking after the children while my husband went off to work in the city centre. So that's a completely different style. But in general, I feel it was a very open-minded, very forward-thinking community, and I felt I had just as many rights as everyone else there. It's honestly the most difficult, contradictory place at the moment because the people are so incredible and the country is so beautiful, and we've just got this, excuse my language, but seriously, who's in charge. And if he could just go, I think we'd be okay again, but it would take us about 20 years.
Okay, so now, as they say, the only thing certain in life are death and taxes. There is a certainty that Mugabe will die at some stage. Now, he's been there for a very long time.
His mother lived till she was 102.
Okay, so
we're screwed.
After he goes, though, do you think there will be change, or do you think that he has brought in all of his deputies and all his lieutenants and, you know, will it perpetuate?
That's the worry, is that there are three or four of his henchmen waiting in the wings to just take over. But to be honest, what I'm kind of hoping for is if he passes away, there will be absolute chaos, possibly a civil war, and someone who's amazing and inspirational and can lead the country forward will step up. But I don't think it's going to happen peacefully. I do think it's going to be a complete and total mess for a while, with everyone trying to claim power.
Tell us about the experience of gay and lesbian people in Zimbabwe. So it is illegal. Mugabe has made a practice of demonising people. You mentioned the white people, but certainly for quite a number of years he's used gays and lesbians, more gays, as something to rally the troops.
I think he likened them to worse than pigs and dogs. I think that was Mugabe that said that. Mm-hmm. When I was 2018, I went back to Zimbabwe and there's a theatre festival there and we performed the Vagina Monologues, which a lot of the monologues are about women.
Well, just the name itself is confronting, I would think, in the country.
Yeah, well, we were banned. We were told that we couldn't perform at all. It was me and a couple of colleagues of mine. We had policemen standing outside the theatre door as we're getting the audience to shout the C word at the top of their lungs. And the policemen are waiting to arrest us. So in terms of that, I felt quite sad about that because my parents are gay. So that was a massive secret in Zimbabwe. They couldn't say anything. Because I was part of the theatrical community, I knew a lot of gay people. Mm-hmm. So it was very much there as an underlying culture. There's a massive lesbian group in Zimbabwe called GALS. The gay guys, I don't even think that they've got a particular group, but it's sort of well known. It's such a small community that you know who everyone is. That was the first time that it kind of made me realize we're doing something that's a little bit controversial. And there's police outside the door waiting to arrest us for it. So what happened to freedom of speech? And the brilliant thing that happened was that the man who was looking after our production, the theatre manager, Walter Mapuruza, amazing guy, he went up to these policemen and went, okay, can we please have your names on this police warrant to arrest these girls? And I'm going to take your names to Joyce Mujuru, who was the female vice president of Zimbabwe at the time. And he went, I'm going to show her these names and you can answer why we're not empowering women in Zimbabwe. You can have that conversation with her. How do you feel about that? And they went, no, we're not the ones. And they left us alone.
So there are these instances where people step up.
Absolutely. All the time.
That's pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
Is it enough to actually bring about some change?
This is the problem, is that Zimbabwe is made up of 13 different clans. The Shona and the Indibele are the two largest, most prominent clans. The issue is that we're not like South Africans, where you've got the Xhosa and the Zulu, who are much more warring, fighting people. Zimbabweans are very passive. They don't want stress. They don't want anger. And they're not angry people. So given that, they also don't have access to weaponry and they have no money. These are the problems. To rally enough people to actually get up and fight, they don't want another war. The typical Zimbabwean expression is, we'll make a plan. Which is like, okay, so that sucks that we haven't had water for 2 days because the water cuts have happened, or we're waiting 48 hours in a petrol queue because there's a petrol shortage, which I've done and my Black Zimbabwean friends have done. It just becomes part of your life. And you make a plan. You find a friend who's got water. You go to their house for a shower. If you see a petrol tanker going past, you phone all of your mates so you can get in the line first. It's things like that.
Some of the other countries in Africa, the likes of Nigeria and Uganda, there have been both calls for and instances where the international community has pulled back on aid on the basis of human rights issues, in particular LGBT rights issues. Is that something that just hurts those people who need that help most?
Yeah, it does. And the issue with that sort of thing is Mugabe's never going to come crawling to the EU. He's not. He's got enough friends in other African countries. He's friends with the Chinese. There will always be an element of support for him. So it's, I honestly don't know what to do with it.
Is the international community doing enough?
I don't think so. The problem is we have nothing that they want. We don't have oil. We don't have anything that's precious. They have no reason to come and bother us and save us. And as cynical as that sounds, I think that's the reason why no one stepped up yet and actually done something.
At the moment, there's a lot of issues around Russia and a lot of social media activity around the world. But somewhere like Zimbabwe has not been picked up.
No.
Why the lack of interest, do you think?
Because we don't have anything that the world needs. There almost needs to be one massive case of atrocity that sparks everyone's emotions about Zimbabwe. And the problem is that I think people have got empathy fatigue. That they see all these images of Africa and it's all starving people and people who are, you know, don't have enough food and can't get to work and don't have transport and that sort of thing. I think there needs to be one incident of someone that everyone identifies with and can see themselves in. Something happens to them and then it'll kick everyone off.
What do you think the future will be for lesbian, gay, transgender people in Zimbabwe?
It's a difficult one because the Zimbabwean people, the Black Zimbabwean people, are incredibly friendly and open. Like, guys walk down the street hand in hand all the time without necessarily being gay. It's just, it's a very, very affectionate culture. So I don't think in the future, if we had a leader who endorsed it and said it was okay, I think that it would be quite welcomely accepted into the rural areas, because I think there's a lot of it that happens there. There's huge communities. It's kept very much under wraps. All we need is an incredibly inspirational, positive leader. So if you know someone...
Perhaps in Australia too, but we won't go.
Yeah. Controversial. I don't think it's as bad here, trust me.
Sarah, thanks for joining us on Worldwide
Wave.
No
worries.
Hello, Australia. This is Gabrielle from Luxembourg. From the other side of the world, we share in your fight for same-sex marriage. Good luck to everyone at Joy 94.9.
And that was the voice of Sarah, who is Zimbabwean-born, now living in Melbourne, and a great and fascinating chat, really intrigued by the warmth and the passion of the local people, this hatred for Mugabe, and her sense that there needs to be something that snaps for there to be a change.
Such an articulate and insightful voice as well. An absolute pleasure.
And it's a bit of a shame, though, that you either have to have... you know, the death of Mugabe followed by civil war, or, you know, some sort of atrocity to get the world's attention to bring some change there. There is some good news, though. And we did mention at the top of the show the gay catwalk, and we've posted this on our Facebook page. So jump on there and have a look, which is Worldwide Wave on Facebook. Now, Zimbabwe does have its own pride parade. They have a Zim Pride. It's very much... an undercover pride festival.
Risking their lives for glamour. This has to be seen to be believed. We urge you, dear listeners, to check out our Facebook page, because these photos have to be seen to be believed, simply because this isn't like any old run-of-the-mill glamour fest catwalk prowl. We're talking about people that are risking their lives to be as fabulous as possible. And this is from the heart.
Indeed, one of the contestants said, "I want you all to be proud of who you are, regardless of what anybody thinks about us. Events like these raise my sense of self-worth in a country that hates us."
So this flamboyant parade, one of the biggest gay and lesbian events in Zimbabwe, although it must be said that's not really saying very much, was held discreetly last weekend, or as discreetly as a bunch of fabulous people walking up and down a catwalk can be, in an isolated farmhouse on a forest-shrouded hilltop on the outskirts of Harare, the capital. And, it was basically the finale of the annual Zim Pride Week, in which the gay community held low-key events, including a film screening and a launch of Out in Zimbabwe, Narratives of Zimbabwean LGBTI Youth. So, fantastic.
There's been so much interest from our listeners tonight in the show. A message come in from Confused. If the masses don't stand up to the few, aren't they just getting the leaders they deserve, like Australia and Mr. Abbott?
I suppose the short answer to that is they might get the bullets that they don't deserve if they stand up a bit too much.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit different in Zimbabwe. It's easy to understand their reluctance to speak out when their lives, and also the lives of their families, could be in serious danger.
And Sarah was also saying Mugabe's tendency to keep the army and the police very well fed, looked after, so they'll pretty much do anything that he desires. Another one in, this is Chris from Eltham. Chris's partner was born in Zimbabwe, and his family got kicked off the farms they had for four generations. They went to visit Zimbabwe and visit some friends last year, and it was so emotional for us to see the state of the country. The people are still very friendly, but the poverty is overwhelming. Everyone is too scared to say the opinion, but for sure Mugabe is hated very much. He has many things to answer for. Great show, guys. Thank you, Chris, and thank you to all of our listeners.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy. And lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time on Joy 94.9 and in Sydney on Star Observer Digital, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse digital radio station.
Lovely having everybody from Sydney. It's a very exciting time in Sydney with Mardi Gras, and a good opportunity for us to look around the world with our worldwide wrap. Russia, it's really, really hard. I mean, I know Russia's been high profile everywhere, but it's really hard to escape. Ban Ki-moon has come out this week during a Sochi... hasn't come out this week. No, don't look at me that way. That would be news.
That was an eyebrow raise.
He has spoken out this week during a speech about Sochi and pretty much had a dig at the International Olympic Committee. So he called for an end to anti-LGBT discrimination and violence during a speech in Sochi. He said, "We must all raise our voices against attacks on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender or intersex people. We must oppose the arrests, imprisonments and discriminatory restrictions they face." So this is in Russia he's saying this. And he also had a bit of a dig at the IOC saying, "I know that Principle 6 of the Olympic Charter enshrines the IOC's opposition to any form of discrimination."
Well, thanks, Ki Moon. That's very appreciative.
Over to Spain now. A Voice of the People poll has found that close to 1 in 4 Spanish Catholics would like their church to start marrying same-sex couples as part of a global snapshot of where ordinary Catholics stand on social issues. Only 27% of Spanish Catholics still say they oppose civil same-sex marriages, though another 9% did not answer the question.
It's pretty significant, though, because Spain is one of those really Catholic countries.
Absolutely. That's, yeah, church all the way. It's quite deeply rooted in the culture, in the society. So that's kind of saying something, you know, if people are turning the corner.
And this was a part of the worldwide survey put out there by the Pope to gain feedback from people around the world. So if you are interested in that, we had a show on Vatican City last month, I think it was. So go on to joy.org.au/worldwidewave. You can listen to all about the survey and the changes happening in the Catholic Church.
Moving on to America, the National Football League draft prospect comes out of the closet. So Michael Sam, a University of Missouri American football defensive lineman, whatever that means, announced he's gay.
One of those little people with really big padding. Did you see any of the Super Bowl?
No.
They're really, like, you look at it, footballers here and, like, they don't have much padding. And the Americans have padding upon padding upon padding.
Mm.
I'm sure I'm missing something, but, you know.
Yeah, there's some.
If I want to go to the
there,
football,
sure.
I want something to look at.
I think it's all about latex and lycra. But anyway, the first team All-American and probable high pick in the National Football League draft told ESPN he came out to his teammates this past August. "I am an openly proud gay man," Sam said. So this season the team went 12-2, finishing with a win in the Cotton Bowl. I do not know what
the
that
Cotton
means.
Bowl.
I don't know. Sam was named the Southeastern Conference's Defensive Player of the Year, and his teammates nominated him Missouri's Most Valuable Player. Isn't that sweet? 24 years old.
So the most poignant thing or significant thing there is, if he is selected, he will be the first out gay player in professional US football.
Oh, I smell endorsement deals.
It is one of those last barriers, though, isn't it? I mean, even, you know, the Olympics are on. There's not, for all the athletes, the tens of thousands of athletes that go, there's, you know, only a handful out. You have here in Australia, we don't have a current footballer yet to come out. It's just that last barrier, isn't it?
Isn't it odd that Ian Roberts came out, 15 years ago? And it's just been crickets since then.
A national rugby league player.
Yes.
For those who don't know. Mm-hmm. He came out and he was playing at the time, but since then, nothing.
Yeah. Presumably there are no other gay footballers in the entire country.
Presumably. Israel now, the health ministry is looking to allow surrogacy for gay couples. Now, Israel has become a very gay-friendly country of late, and the health ministry has advised that it intends to go to Parliament to put forward this proposal that same-sex couples will no longer have to travel overseas to access surrogacy. Pretty much the bill allows same-sex couples to apply as individuals to seek surrogacy in Israel. They think this is the most likely path chosen to avoid annoying right-wing religious government coalition partners who will attempt to block it.
I would think yes.
And a little shout-out closer to home in our own region. We had a message before from Douglas from the Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation. So if you haven't heard of this is a group. Kaleidoscope has been operating in the UK looking at LGBT rights around the world for some time, and now there is an Australian chapter that has started. So Kaleidoscope Human Rights Foundation is looking particularly at LGBT rights in the Asia and Pacific region. So you can join their Facebook page. Go on to Facebook for the Kaleidoscope Australia Human Rights Foundation.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight we have been stopped off in Zimbabwe, and I think it's actually been really, really fascinating. I think from seeing the media that Zimbabwe gets here in Australia, I had a really negative impression. So it was really heartwarming to hear of the friendliness and acceptance of, ground level people in Zimbabwe. And similarly, the resilience of the LGBT community, even with all these attacks, they still get together and put together a pride event.
Warms the cockles of the heart, doesn't it?
It does, it does, which is really wonderful. You can find this show and many more podcasts up on our website. It's joy.org.au. And we come to you every week looking at LGBT rights around the world. So a big thank you to Sarah for talking to us tonight, for Robert on the front desk. This has been the World Wide Wave, and we'll catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.